The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for their fantastic app using promo code RTRS. Brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of The Process at processrealtor.com. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And Kinetic Skateboarding. Get free tunes for life. Well, not your whole life, but the life of your board with the purchase of any new snowboard. On the show today, Sixers have now won six straight. And in some ways, their victory over the Spurs, I think, was the most stunning one of the year, at least in how it happened. As we approach the trade deadline, the rumors about our friend number 25 are heating up again. Bunch of great selections for the Ricky Bagel to be made by Kismet Bagels in Philly. We have hundreds of different selections, so we might have to have a vote. We'll go through some of those. And we'll look back on maybe the strangest Ricky we've ever done, and that's really saying something. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here.
Say the name. I say the name. I say the name.
We will write y'all.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who always shovels his own snow, never pays anybody to do it for him. That is Mike Levin, right?
In LA. I haven't shoveled snow in over 10 years. What a treat. What a treat that is.
I went from hating it to now it's like a nice little workout. As long as it's the snow, I don't know, we had like 5-6 inches in Jersey yesterday, and it was like that light kind. Sort of, you know, wasn't too heavy, so I didn't mind it.
Yeah, the one with the hard ice at the bottom.
Oh.
And that's a tough one. I feel like I would enjoy it more now than I would later. But I hesitate to say that because then my dad is going to be like, then come back.
Yeah. It's a good time to listen to stuff too, you know. Anyway. So the Sixers have now won six straight. Yesterday, I say in shocking fashion in that it was just like a game that they should win, a game that never really got that close, even though it got to like 9 points or something. They won end to end relatively simply and easily, executed pretty well at both ends. And it just seems like it was just this normal fucking win that a good team has, and now six in a row. And Mike, I have to ask you, have you been lulled into the Sixers again with these six straight wins and the current play of Joel Embiid?
Yes and no. I would say mostly
okay.
No.
Okay.
This is a very like cushy part of the schedule. Playing the Spurs and Magic without some of their best players, you know, Derek White, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson. There's just it's a game they should have won. They did win. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we're missing Maxey and stuff, but it's just like, it's hard to feel anything other than like, yes, they can beat some bad teams, they can beat some good teams, but on the whole, they're still lacking so much. But they have to win these games. Like, they have to compound victories after losing some like embarrassing ones earlier in the season to also shorthanded teams. They need to win these games, and they need to, if there's a Simmons trade that happens this season, they need to be within striking distance of like not having three horrible first round playoff matchups. Like, if you can get one where that's against like the Wizards or something, then like you're in better shape than having to go up against everybody. If they do make the trade that we're all hoping that they make.
Yeah, I agree, though. We can look back at last year's playoff lineup.
Oh, I know.
We determined was the most easy in the history of
easy,
the Eastern
cakewalk.
Conference
right? Finals. Yeah. Still haven't gotten there since 2001. What a joke.
And you mentioned Maxey not being in there, and it is, I don't think I agree with everything that you said, but I don't think you can underestimate. They don't have any guards right now. Like in a team who has for the last 10 years been at a barely had any guards. Right now, they basically have one guard with Maxey and Milton not being around, you know? So even though this is a cake part of the schedule, for them to go in there and like, you're like, oh, Korkmaz is starting at point, you know, or George Niang is like, is he the shooting guard in this lineup or something like that? Like holding it together in a game like that, I think is, you know, I don't know. Having to play these games without any actual playable guards aside from Seth Curry is something, you know?
No, it's nice. I mean, like earlier in the season when this was like a feel good story, it was like, look how they're fighting and scrappy without all their players. And they seem to be better when they're shorthanded a little bit. Because then it feels like it's an us against the wall type, us against the world type of thing. And Seth has been great as a distributor and has done a great and has been getting open looks and hitting his shots. John Schumann reported that he's having like the best mid-range jump shooting season of all time. I know I'm inexplicably disliking Seth. He's like a very good player. He does so many things. He does two things like very, very well, and everything else drives me crazy. But like he's been extremely helpful. He's a plus 30 last night. He's just doing a lot and he's carrying a big load. I just worry that the fact that he's the slowest and weakest player I've ever seen in my life will eventually catch up to him in games that matter against teams that are good.
So I had a thought about Embiid and Curry in your position, which I have not disagreed with at all, you know, especially like your frustration, I think was a funny moment of frustration that nobody has vocalized. But when you said it, it felt that way having watched him. So I went to the game last night. It was the first time I had been to a Sixers game since prior to COVID. And thanks to my friend Rick, a generous man, I was sitting courtside of the Sixers, which I have not done since I was like a little kid, I think. And I normally don't like, as far as watching the game, I don't like sitting up close because I think you see less. You see different things, but I like sitting. My seats are in the second level, and I like sitting up there because I feel like you see the game better. But in this case, watching the two-man game between Curry and Embiid, which has really gotten to a place where they have really figured some things out and they're very comfortable with each other, like they know where the other guy's going to be and all that sort of stuff. And I know it was not against a good team, and I know this isn't like you're not running Curry and Embiid two-man game in like the Eastern Conference Finals to win. But I think back, and I think back to Redick, who he loved playing with, right? And they get rid of him, and there was reasons for it and all that sort of stuff. But here's this guy that Embiid says on a podcast once, I will never find a two-man game as good as that one, and that guy's gone. And then there's Butler. And Butler and Embiid, it's not like they fit together in any, you know, magical way, but Embiid loves playing with him. And I'm watching this interaction up close between Curry and Embiid, and I was thinking about what you said. And I said, you know what? If they don't make the trade, I don't think that they can get rid of Curry, because I just don't think you can do that to Embiid, who is putting up with this fucking situation this year, like a soldier at this point, you know, like really, but weird metaphor, but really like putting up with it and becoming a leader, like even in the press conferences afterwards, like his interaction with Maxey and then his interaction with Thibault and like publicly telling them to do something better for the team, you know, in an encouraging way, all that sort of stuff. And I just thought to myself, like, man, if they're not going to bring in somebody who's going to like do this better, who's really going to raise the ceiling, like just fucking leave Curry there and let him be happy with it. So
totally agree with all that. I think the two-man game between Embiid and Curry has taken a special step forward. I think pretty quickly everyone tried to be like, well, this is just like the Redick thing and he's going to do that. And it was like kind of clunky and it got a little bit better. And it was like work sometimes, doesn't work other times. And it doesn't have the like speed that the JJ one had because Seth is slower than JJ. But over the last, I would say all season, but especially lately, it's just looked incredible. Like there's a rhythm to it, and it's really a unique two-man game in the NBA, because they give it back to each other, they go back and forth. Seth is like running around, Embiid like pushes out forward, he He throws it like underhand passes in a weird way. It's just like, it is a special thing. And I think you're totally right. Like, I'm personally frustrated by his weaknesses, even though he's having an incredible shooting season, even though he's like carrying this team in a bunch of ways, and him and Embiid are perfect together. I just like, I'm putting myself in a position of like, what's it going to look like in late April? And I'm seeing him dying on screens and just being slow and getting bottled up by a defender who cares instead of like, you know, January malaise. And I'm frustrated by it, and I wish he would do things faster. But he's carrying the team. And I think the Embiid point is a really good one.
And I would
just say like the contract is really good, and he would get something back in a trade, like as opposed to just like trading somebody who's not good. It's like, this could be something that actually gets you a more dynamic athlete to cover up their weaknesses. Like you saw Charlie Brown Jr., who played last night, local kid, St. Joe's kid, like really fun to see him get in there and get some run. And like, he's instantly the second best athlete on the team. Like he gets in there and he's running around. He's like getting rebounds. He got like a couple rebounds strong. And you're like, where's this been? Where is this like the possibility of like an athletic person on this team? And it was cool to see Charlie Brown, and that was like individual, but it did like add to the idea of like, why are there so many small, slow, weak players on this team? Could we get a couple more athletes, please? Basketball's actually so cool if you have more athletic players. Like it's actually part of the thing. And they don't really have those guys. I'm glad individually that Charlie Brown got that. I mean, that first play, like the steal, the Danny rear window block, and then the outlet to Charlie Brown for it. It was just like, this is happening fast. They're doing it. It was cool. And good for Doc for like giving him a chance and him delivering. It was cool.
We are a pro dog podcast here at Rights to Ricky Sanchez. And if you are pro dog, if you have a dog, I don't say own, but if you have a dog, you must have a Big Barker dog bed. BigBarker.com/Ricky is where you get one with the process pup patches. We got a new process pup yesterday. He's got a green mohawk. I haven't put him on the website yet. His name is Charlie Buckets. Lives in Fresno. I guess you could call him, you could go Charlie Brown, Charlie Buckets, if Charlie was more of a bucket getter, I think. But Charlie eats, sleeps, and gets buckets. And unlike 25, he doesn't miss a shot. Loves his Big Barker. Big Barker dog beds. The reason I say that you have to have one if you're pro dog and if you have a dog is because it is the only real dog bed on the market, the only one that has a real positive effect on your dog's health. How is that possible? Well, your dog spends so much time sleeping, and if you don't think about what your dog is sleeping on, then its joints are going to get creaky. Dogs develop arthritis just like people. Dogs need to sleep on a supportive mattress just like people. That's what Big Barker is. BigBarker.com/Ricky. Their bed has been proven in a study by PennVet to increase quality of life, increase range of motion, all of those things. And it is the combination of the expertise going into the bed and the length of time it's going to last that contributes to the price. Like, look, you're going to have your dog 10 years, 15 years, whatever. You got to have the right bed, and the Big Barker dog bed is the one. Again, BigBarker.com/Ricky is where you go to get one with the two process butt patches. You can send us a picture. We'll put them in the gallery. I don't say him. I mean, put the dog in the gallery. Could be a girl dog if you want. BigBarker.com/Ricky. 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, they'll give you a free refund or a full refund rather, even pay for shipping. And it is handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds.
Bark, bark.
So back to Joel. The passing and the leading the break on display last night was fucking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good. We can do it every podcast. I don't mind doing this every podcast. He's incredible, and he keeps getting better. And I for years called him out for not being a good enough passer and wanting to see more passing and wanting to see more anticipating double teams, wanting to see more like finding guys in a position to shoot, not just like tossing it out as a security valve and being like, I don't have anything here. Like, here's the ball, somebody else. But like really making a point to like pass guys open and find them in a position to shoot. And he's been doing that. He's just really been doing that. I think like the obvious answer last night is that he found Matisse cutting underneath a ton of times, which I've been begging Matisse to do that as well for a long time, because like, Matisse basically is, over the last couple week or so, has been, anytime a guy, the reason their offense kept getting sluggish after like having a really hot start is that when Matisse was in there, their guy would just double off him and just be like, I'm sludging it up for everybody else. And now they finally found a way to counter that, which is anytime Matisse's guy doubles, whether it's Embiid or Tobias or just like helps out on other shooters, Matisse is cutting to the basket. And so often for months, Matisse would cut to the basket, be open, no one find him. Like you would see him just like be open, be open, be open. No one's anticipating that. And it's like, God, they would have easy buckets if they did that. And once in a while, you started seeing that occasional lob here and there. Tobias would find him a little bit, but not that much, like a little bit. And then lately, it's just been making a point to do it. And last night, it was three really nice passes, one over his head. And it's just, they're looking for it. Matisse is doing a smart job of doing it and not just running his fastest to the basket, but cutting like in a way to make himself available. It's great. It's really, really cool. And he has the highest assist percentage of his career, the lowest turnover rate of his career. And that shows. And he talked about it in the press conference after the game, talking about how like, this is I know people like call me out for this over the last 2 years, like as a weakness in my game. And like, he's now making a point to not be a weakness anymore. And it's just great that he's that good that he can be like, this weakness, no longer a weakness. Great.
And it's not just statistical. It passes the eye test. Like every game, it looks like a flip switch. It really does. It looks like he is now seeing the game in a different way than he's like, it's slowed down for him or something.
Yeah. You know? And handling the double teams better, not just getting stuck there. I think it'll be tough over a 7-game series, but there's got to be ways for him to counteract that. And he's just thinking the game in a level that's higher than everybody else right now. And he looks athletically good. He's dunking the fuck out of the ball left and right.
And hanging on the rim rather than fucking falling down afterwards. Like, you know, like so.
Two hands hanging on the rim. That's always fun. Pull the fucking down, Chocolate Thunder. It's just really, he's just in a special zone. And that's why when we talked about, even as I was like incredibly frustrated with the team, that's when we talked about like the possibility of a stealth tank this season. It's just like Embiid is too good to do that. He's simply too good. And when he's playing at this level, you have to start wondering, like, I know Dal's weighing so many things with the Ben trade, right? And we can talk about that in a second. But like, if there is something about doing it, if you can get like an 80% of the trade this year versus 88% of the trade, 95% of the trade next year of what you think you could get, there's some value to be like, Joel's really good right now. And he's really healthy, or as healthy as he gets right now. And I don't know that whatever the Sacramento package or the backup Portland package or any of those kinds of things would actually take them into a championship. But I would hesitate to assume that with a ton of shooting and just enough defense and Maxey improving as much as he has, that Joel couldn't just fucking do this thing. I hesitate
there
to be like,
there it is. I asked you the top of the,
I know, but it's Joel. It's Joel. It's not the team. Yeah. It's not the team. It's just Joel. Like he could just decide that he struggled in the playoffs. He's gone through stretches of his career where he's struggled. There's been guys that he's kind of been riddled by, whether it's like Valanciunas or Gasol, weirdly Horford. And it just seems like right now he finished second in MVP voting last year. He is playing at such a high level that I would hesitate to assume, okay, the Ben trade didn't come this year. We can get a better trade in the offseason. Maybe you could, but like throwing away the whatever it is, 3% chance, 5% chance that Joel is just the best player in the league and decides in the playoffs, we're going to do this. And they hit enough shots, even though they're weak in so many other areas, they hit enough shots to like survive. I don't know, but Joel's playing the best basketball of his career. And I just, my patience for assuming this is going to continue forever and that we should just be okay with a huge zero in our payroll in our lineup because someone's not there. I'm just, he's really good. He's incredibly good. And we owe it to him to try.
One thing I'm going to oversimplify it. This is like something that Doc Rivers would say that I don't know ball. I haven't balled enough. But I look at what Embiid has done, sort of like bringing the ball up, just grabbing and going, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously they're missing a lot of that last year, this year, because of who they're missing, because that person decided not to play, and that's why they're like 30th in pace or whatever the fuck they are. But there is some of it, I believe, that watching Embiid just deciding to do it is a decision and schematic. Mm-hmm. And if the other team is not going to pressure you doing it, then there are plenty of players on the Sixers who can grab the ball and run it up into the front court. You know, like I think that obviously their personnel is not does not lead itself to being a fast break team or whatever. And obviously 25, really good at that. It was one of the decisions he made. I think it was a decision he made because of what he couldn't do. He sort of overcompensated for it by pushing it because knew that once we got into the half court, he was going to be kind of limited. But I just watch Embiid and I'm just like, there are more guys on this team who can just grab and go and make the decision and see if something's there. And I think it has to be a decision from Rivers to say, hey, we need some of these. Like, we need some easy buckets in transition to give Joel a break. And I think they should just try to do it more. That is my
totally. Time. I mean, and you've seen Doc do the like on the sideline, like doing this a bunch of times, waiting for people to go and like move it along. I will say, like, over the last few games, they've been playing bad teams. And that is important to note. But they are playing faster right now. Objectively, like, there are way fewer late shot clock possessions where it's just like Tobias having to operate from 18 with like 6 seconds left and him deciding like, I'm not going to pass it anymore. I'm just going to like slowly take a step back and off the front rim. And I don't know what that is. I don't know. Maybe it's just like the team has played together for long enough and they're finally, even without Maxi, they're finally like at a place where they can like know where each other's going to be and they're getting a better feel for each other, et cetera, et cetera. Or maybe it's just a couple weird games, but like this team is not good enough in the half court to, and they don't have enough like guys that can just get you a bucket. There's not DeMar DeRozan on this team. Like, they have to play faster. They have to make quick decisions. They have to be working downhill. They have to be getting easy buckets in transition, all that stuff. And over the last couple games, they have been. And they're playing bad teams, but it's nice to see. And they're moving the ball well. It's just good. I mean, Tobias has been making way quicker decisions, as we talked about on the podcast last week or 2 days ago, whatever. It's been nice. Like, they're doing some things well. And am I like believing in them? Am I being like, this version of the team is going to like, we can beat the odds and all that stuff? No, like they're not good enough right now. But if they decide to make the Ben trade and things coalesce and Embiid stays healthy, like, then, you know, there's not that many teams in the East in the playoff atmosphere that could cover Embiid. And if you can't cover Embiid one-on-one, which most teams can't,
yeah,
then you have to send doubles. And right now, or you have to go into a zone, which no one played zone against us for a little bit. So that, you know, hold your breath. But like, him being able to dissect a team with that are sending doubles from the weak side, from the top, wherever it is, like, that is huge. And it's a lot of load for one guy to carry, because he's also obviously carrying the defense. But right now, he's playing the best basketball of his career, and he finished second in MVP voting last year, and he looks healthy, and he's dunking, and he's making like crazy ball handling moves, and he's just like ruining people. It's really very exciting to see. I wonder if that changes the calculus for Darryl at all. I obviously we'll never know, but like, it's got to be fascinating to be like the 11th most powerful person in the Sixers front office, to be like, I don't really have any like power here. I'm just watching and like seeing what the like factors are. I mean, are we looking at Joel and thinking that he's good enough? Like, now this trade makes sense. Whereas a trade like 2 months ago, when they wasn't playing that well and the team was struggling in different ways, like, we would never trade him for that player. But now it's like, well, do we owe it to ourselves and Embiid to like just get that guy and a bunch of picks and then see if we can move something in the future? Like, I wonder if the target is so set on like, it's like these four or five guys that we'll trade him for, or if it's like, as things change, that like sort of is floating a little bit. I really don't know. And I think we'll never know, but it's fascinating to think about.
My guess would be, if I had to guess, is that Morey is completely willing to give up this year if he has to. Like that, that if I had to bet, that would be the bet. Like he has as high a tolerance for this shit as any like GM in the league, you know, like tolerance for like not making the early move. So I don't know. By the way, with Embiid this year, they are 19-8, which is a 58 win pace, which would be a better pace than last season, even. So that's, you know, pretty good.
Better pace than last season. Last season's Embiid only.
No, last season's pace? Entire totally, last, right, the right, entirety right. Of last season. Right.
I feel like for the most part of Embiid after his first, like, you know, with the first season where he played, you know, 20-30 games, really the 28 games. I feel like that's been just him. Like when he plays, they're like a high 50s team. And that's, if that's the case, then could he just do it? I don't know. He's really, really, really good. And if Daryl is deciding like it's not going to be this year unless it's these guys, then like if I'm Daryl, I'm watching Embiid play this well, like with pain. Like I'm like, I feel.
If you're Daryl, you're also talking, an NFT guy.
No, I wouldn't change. Be. If I'm Daryl, I'm stopping being an NFT guy. you're watching it, you're just like, he's so good. Like, is there anything I can do to like make it happen now? And I really don't know. I really don't know. Let's talk about the Ben stuff then.
Okay. So before we do, Adam Kasabi is the official realtor of the process. People ask me all the time, Spike, how do you spell Kasabi? Say it's easy. It's Kasebe. Adam Kasabi. Kasebe. You don't need to know how to spell it, though. You just need to know how to say it and go to processrealtor.com. I got an email from I'll just give his first name because I don't know if he would want me to give his whole name, but Adam helped him buy a home, a vacation home in Rehoboth. And he was just talking about, you know, it's a crazy market out there, especially in, you know, those sorts of areas, like the more remote shore town sort of stuff, which definitely you should buy in Delaware rather than Jersey, lower property taxes, lower overall cost. And Seth was just like, hey, it was a tough thing and we didn't think we were going to get it. But because Adam was so dialed in all the time, we found this one home we never thought we would have been able to find. Adam gave me great advice on what sort of bid to go in with, and they got the home. And now I'm going to have to do a podcast at his house at some point in Rehoboth. So Adam Kasabi is official realtor of the process. You need somebody who you trust, who's dialed into this shit, who lives it, who breathes it. And that is Kasabi and his team. Now, they handle Delaware and Maryland, all the Delaware beaches, which, by the way, better to buy, as I've said, than the Jersey beaches. But they handle all of Delaware, all of Maryland. But if you're in a different area or if you need to refinance, he's your guy as well. He can't sell you a house in Jersey or New York or PA or anything, but he will interview realtors for you and find the right person for you and then help find you somebody to finance the house. He helped me refinance. He helped me find TJ, my realtor in Jersey. And Adam Kasabi is the guy. You need a great realtor if you're going to buy a home or sell a home. Adam Kasabi is it. Based out of Long and Foster in Bethany Beach. As I said, cover all of Delaware and Maryland, but anything you need. Kasebe, 302-864-8643. 302-864-8643 or Adam at processrealtor.com. Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process. Okay. With the trade deadline coming up in about a month now, there have been a few more rumors. They are as follows. Mark Stein reports that the Sixers' ultimate goal is still to have him come back and play for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, I believe Mark Stein said that the Hawks could be a surprise suitor for him, which, as you tweeted, the funniest possible result, him ending up on the Hawks.
Yeah.
And the other report being that the Kings are more willing to part with Tyrese Halliburton or De'Aaron Fox in such a trade. And then not a conflicting report, but a related report in that Kyle Newbeck said, his sources say, if the Sixers were to make a trade with Sacramento, they would want to reroute Fox to a different team because they're not that interested in him. And Halliburton is a nice player, but would not be able to be the centerpiece of said trade. I do think the Hawks are a super interesting team to trade with. because they have too many guys.
Mm-hmm.
They have plenty of guys that could help the Sixers. It just, I can't get over the fucking craziness of trading him to the Hawks.
Yeah, that'd be something else. I also don't know, I mean, I guess for a Hawks trade, we can take it one team at a time. For a Hawks trade, like, it's something like Bogdanović and Reddish and like a pick or two. I don't think a John Collins makes sense. I don't think they'd want to trade John Collins. They seem to like him a lot. And certainly we have no use for Capella. So then in that situation, their lineup is their starting lineup is enormous with Trey, Herder, Collins, Simmons, Capella, which is a wildly big lineup and imposing. Bogdanović is good. Like, he would help for sure. For sure he'd help. And Reddish is extremely talented and frustrating and raw and doesn't really pass, but like has a lot of room to keep getting better. Not a package I think that would help you win a championship this year.
Would you do Bogdanović, Reddish, and Gallinari?
I know you love Gallinari. He doesn't do much for me. He's pretty immobile.
He's good. He'd be great with Embiid in the sure, same way. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he'd
say his
be
name.
Perfect for.
What's say that? Who are you going to say?
Like, Ilyasova.
There it is. It has to be. It's going to be Ilyasova always creeping out of the woodwork. Bellinelli and Ilyasova. Come on.
But I was not an Ilyasova guy.
I agree.
But he had such a quick trigger, and Embiid loved playing with him so much that I think Gallinari has more balls, like, offensively, and more to his game offensively. I know he's like at the tail end of his career. I just like guys with like guts like that and who will just let it fly. And I think Gallo would be great for this team.
I just don't need any more slow guys, Spike. Don't need any more slow unathletic guys. You can't have Korkmaz, Niang, and Gallinari. That's just like, that's too much of that.
You mentioned, I don't think the Hawks would want to trade Collins either, but would you do like Bogdan and Collins?
I would do it if they certainly need the rebounding. He is mobile. He is flawed as a backup, like small ball five, but he could give you an option of doing that, in series where Drummond doesn't make as much sense. I worry about him and Harris as a fix. Like, Collins does like posting up. He does like being around the rim, and he's a little bit more of that than like a Miles Bridges, who can do those kinds of dunks and like attack the rim.
Jesus.
If I had Collins,
I would just sit fucking Harris on the bench and just say, like,
I know,
I'll stop. I know. We'll see.
That'd be concerning. So I would want to try to trade him. Not that they're not trying that already, but it wouldn't be a seamless fit, but it'd be interesting. It'd certainly be interesting. And I think if you're Atlanta, like, the idea of getting Ben is going, okay, we can put Collins and Ben together when Capella sits and kind of switch everything and still have rim protection and rebounding. But it's interesting. It's an interesting trade. I think Atlanta is a team of like everybody. I just think the list is small. And Atlanta is on the longer list of those guys. I don't think any of those guys would be the ultimate needle mover. But if, again, based on what I was saying before, like, Bogdanović makes you better. Cam Reddish gives you hope for the future as a big wing initiator. And also could possibly flip those guys for something else later on. Like, the thing we've been struggling with for this time is like, we need a team to tear down their best player in almost every case, while deciding to tear down not with picks, but with Ben Simmons. And it's just a specific thing. And I think Daryl thinks that is the stronger negotiating point than being a team that like their star would want to go to, and we can just give you a truckload of picks for. Like, if you do a half measure trade where it's, you know, whether it's Bogdanović and Reddish and like two or three picks, then you can go like, okay, we can do these and we can flip those. And then when Brad Beal becomes available, when Dame becomes available, when Jaylen Brown becomes available, whatever, then it is the like, okay, here's the Godfather offer. We have the picks. Not just like, do you want to rebuild around Ben Simmons? Which I don't know. I don't know if someone's going to make that decision.
Hopefully they do. And I have no interest in De'Aaron Fox. I think Halliburton is a nice player, but probably better in our imagination. And he's sort of
I love Halliburton.
Well, he's like Lonzo Ballish in his extra guy and not like the guy. Not that he's extra, sure. But like he's just like this weird guard that isn't like gonna really initiate too much. And
so that was who he was. He has shown more of that as a actual initiator in the pros than I think his detractors thought. And I thought he would be just more like a Lonzo thing. He's not as good. He's not as physically imposing as Lonzo defensively, but like a similar like kinetic passing and can shoot off the catch and he can shoot off the dribble a little bit. And him and Rashawn run a really nice pick and roll. He does have that, and he would be a really nice fit next to Maxey. A really nice fit next to Maxey.
But they would need some amazing wing to go along with them, I think.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I think every scenario you're looking at, you do the like, okay, well, that'd be a great third team. And like, that'd be a great third team. Like, that'd be such a great third team. We could reroute. And it's like, we need the route. We don't need any more reroutes. Like, we need there's such a few names of like the guy that is available. It's the same names that have been floated basically since June.
Yeah.
And so my printer's witchcraft is happening for some reason.
Printers always do that. I have a printer at work that in the middle of the day will just start making noises as if it's about to print and then goes back to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just really running around doing a little exercise. That's good. Good for you, man. But yeah. So I love Halliburton. I really, really love him. And also, it's fun to have both guards on the team being named Tyrese is fun. Fox is, he's a special player. I think I'm interested in seeing what are you doing? Can I turn it off? Should I unplug it?
No, I keep it alive. Don't unplug it. It'll be like fucking Maximum Overdrive, that Stephen King thing. You're going to unplug it. It's just going to attack you more. It doesn't need electricity. It's got real power. Just stay away from it.
Anyway, I think he is a special ball handler. He has special speed. I don't know how well his game will age into his 30s and stuff, but he's still got a lot of years left in his prime. He's got a really nice little mid-range. The hope is that he improves as a three-point shooter. Like, he's interesting. I agree that his skill set overlaps with Maxey a ton, but and it wouldn't be like my first choice, but he is really talented, and I wonder in the Mike theory of like nobody's bad, I wonder if his defense really improves when he's not on Sacramento. I wonder if he like the shooting improves when he's not on Sacramento. And just like he's just been he's been like the guy there for a number of years and like going nowhere. And
I just want to see more production with a guy who has the ball that much, even on a shitty team. Like
totally fair.
You know? Our Apple Podcast 5-star review and the YouTube, the hardest stomach YouTube comment of the week, both brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding this week. It is snowboard weather. It is hoodie weather. It is Kinetics weather. Free tunes for life, the purchase of a brand new snowboard from Kinetic. And as far as the hoodies, check it out. KineticSkateboarding.com. Promo code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. Okay. Apple Podcast 5-star review. We passed 3,000. We're now at 3,037. This comes from Lee Lee B. Hey, Spike and Mike, just finished the 3,000 ratings read through. My family and I were sitting in a long line for COVID testing in the age of Omicron and decided it was a good way to waste time. Miraculously, the line moved fast, and yet by the time we were done, we were hooked and we finished the remaining 2 hours of the pod. Thank you for being the only gastrointestinal podcast.
So, what a haunting phrase, the remaining 2 hours of the pod.
Yeah. The review pod goes so well with just a little bit of Omicron testing. And the hardest stomach YouTube comment of the week, we didn't do it. We haven't done it in a bit, so I have two. First, this comes from Brendan McEwen. Very interested to hear Mike's thoughts on CJ doing the outro on the pod he was not on. Is this an encroachment onto your territory or a wonderful moment of growth for a young enterprising producer?
No, I love seeing CJ develop. Absolutely. Okay. CJ's passing, his handles really improving, starting to show flashes of being a regular starter. really getting there. Who knows? His upside is enormous.
And then from Lucas Boria, the mic rant on Seth got me confused. Like, how do you hate that guy?
I don't. It is a conflicted feeling because his offensive game is, I mean, he's like the best offensive player of all time. And yet he's like such a weakness on the other end. And I foresee him being, as we saw in previous years, so unable to like shake free of bigger, stronger defenders who are carrying in the playoffs that it's going to disappear. But maybe he's just gotten better. Maybe it's not just that he's had more opportunity, but that he's like improved and found more ways to, you know, take contested shots and stuff. I don't believe it. He's so little. I want to shove him. I want to shove him into the wall. Be bigger and stronger and more athletic. Just like do it.
It's time for some public shaming from Embiid. You know, lighthearted public shaming.
Yeah.
You know,
forcing Maxi to shoot more, forcing Matisse to shoot more, and forcing Seth to grow like 3 or 4 inches.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
We mentioned on the last pod, we love small businesses. There is a one in Philly that has grown by leaps and bounds that was started during the pandemic called Kismet Bagels. Husband and wife team. And now they're just like blowing up. It's great. Love Kismet Bagels. Great bagels. And they are pro Ricky. And they offered to do a Ricky-themed bagel. And we got a lot of suggestions for Ricky-themed bagels. Some are just funny. Some are legit. And I thought, Mike, I would run them by you. I think eventually we have to do like a poll or something like that. So let me throw
I'm going to take the air out of this on the front end rather than having to go through an effort. No one understood. Very few. I don't know. No one. Most people did not understand the assignment. The bagel is not a Sixers themed bagel. It is the bagel should be called, if it's a Ricky bagel, the Ricky Sanchez. Doing bagels that are like about, you know, Zaire Sesame, or I saw Jason Lipschitz did like a Hollis Thompson. It's like, no, it's about us. Usually I'm the one saying it's not about us. This bagel should be about us. If they're doing a Ricky themed bagel, if they're doing a Sixers bagel, then these are all great ideas.
Yes. So no TTP. This is the rights to Ricky Sanchez bagel.
Look, that's the
assignment. I appreciate this. I get accused of being the egomaniac. You say right.
The rules were,
okay.
Hey, we want to do a Ricky bagel. That's cool. And then we're getting friggin' pitches about, you know, Lipschitz. We got burner accounts. We got Ship Athesia stuff. That's not a Ricky themed bagel.
Okay.
I need bagel specifics that would apply to us.
So a say the old school load management in the YouTube comments says a say the name bagel. Does that?
It should be called the Ricky Sanchez.
The Ricky
Sanchez.
That
is the bagel that it should be. It should be called the Ricky Sanchez, or the rights to Ricky Sanchez if they want to call it that.
So then in some way it should just be a bagel that tastes good. That is called the rights to Ricky Sanchez. I can't think of can you think of like a flavor combination that would lead up to Ricky Sanchez? Do we know what he tastes like?
But that's the assignment for the listeners.
Okay. All right. So we're refocusing it. Sorry, Kismet. I thought we were going to have some sort of resolution, but Mike makes a great point. This really needs to be more about us. And that goes to the listener as well. Please make a suggestion for the rights to Ricky Sanchez bagel.
Sanchez justification bagel. It should be this because this taste is like this, and it should be this kind of schmear because of that. Like, that should be the vibe, not, you know. These are all good ideas for a Sixers themed bagel, but like the Danny, where they trip and throw it on your shirt when you're handing it to you. That's funny. Yeah. I like that.
It's very funny.
I think that they should do that. But that's not a Ricky themed bagel. It's not.
Okay, fair enough. And if you would like to, they do schmears as well. If there's an accompanying schmear, great. I would rather it be a bagel separately, like so you can just buy a bag of Ricky Sanchez's, you know? Like, I don't want it to be a bagel sandwich. I would love for it to just be a bagel.
So you wouldn't say like the Ricky, okay. I don't know, that confuses me a little bit.
Makes it harder, you think?
I think so, because then it's just saying like everything or sesame or pumpernickel or something with like these kinds of topics. I think this the order, right, would be like cucumbers on cream cheese with a piece of lox or something.
So that they can do that. The problem being they are not a brick and mortar yet. So when they sell like sandwiches or whatever, it's at somewhere else and you can't just like go pick up a bunch. But they can do that. So like just hit us with your suggestion.
Yeah.
And we will. But the Ricky Sanchez bagel. Or the rights to Ricky Sanchez bagel at Kismet.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that has to be it. Or we could, or they should do a Sixers bagel and then these pitches are all great.
Nah. Fuck off. I don't want it. There's enough Sixers stuff out there.
No, there's plenty.
All right. Before we get to mailbag and a look back at Color Star, there's one sponsor who is, they're all close to our hearts, but it's fair to say LL Pivorsky and LL Pivorsky Jewelers is the most close to our hearts because if we didn't, he would hold it against us for a long time. I think he's still probably mad. He had to share the sponsorette with all of the other sponsors when you copped out of giving one of them the award.
Yeah, Mike, no chance. Come on.
The LL Pivorsky Jewelers was the first sponsor of the Ricky, sold over 250 engagement rings to rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners, and exactly one engagement ring to rights to Ricky Sanchez hosts. That is Mike, who bought Alyssa's engagement ring from LL Pivorsky and LL Pivorsky Jewelers. It is an intimidating thing to have to buy an engagement ring. You don't really know what you're looking at. It's like terrifying. It's expensive. Like you don't want pressure. You want to be able to ask a million questions. And Lee's like patience with that and his just sort of like emotional investment in getting the right ring to our listeners has been exhibited time after time. And we've heard so many great stories about it. And we joke about Lee all the time, but this is like an industry where you go to, you know, jewelry stores and it's intimidating. Like the salespeople are right on you and LL just doesn't do that. And he treats all of our listeners so respectfully, no matter how much they're spending. And he's great at his job. And that's why he's been in business for over 30 years. And that's why we trust him so much. And that's a legitimate thing. If you want to buy an engagement ring from LL, make an appointment, 215-627-2252. And for people not in the Philly area or aren't comfortable going in there, people have purchased rings from all over the country from LL. So you don't have to be in that area. At LL Pivorsky on Twitter, Lee at LLPivorsky.com. And the store, as I mentioned, is at 707 Walnut. Always a supporter of our charities as well. That is LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
The LL. Bagel in a suit. A little bagel suit.
Before we get to the mailbag, so we did, thanks to Jeremy, who came of The Century, who came on the pod last time. The Century is a...
Sean O'Connor, I'm so sorry. Sean O'Connor made the point that his background does lend itself to having been Dietrich's source at Sixers Enough for the Bernegate scandal, and he Sixers Enough reached out to me first. I ignored it, and JR obviously knows who we are, so it's just JR denied it. He denied it, but I don't know.
My long-standing theory is that the person who was the source did not actually figure that out from like algorithms or some bullshit. I think it was somebody in the organization. I think it was somebody in the organization who had a bullseye on Colangelo and made up. Like I'm still waiting to see the algorithmic equation that leads to four Twitter accounts being Brian Colangelo's wife. Like what the fuck are we talking about?
I know.
So
really interesting. Interesting to have been left hanging for all these years to not know, because there's the other part of the story is a great story, but we don't know. We don't have answers to it, so we can't. But I agree that speculation does lead you to someone, because like what is the first inkling that you could have that's like, I mean, I guess you could see like, oh, that's interesting. This guy's really defending Brian. That's weird. Right. Let me look at their follows. Interesting. But like to go and then get the other three or four accounts is just, it's a little suspicious, unless like you said, that someone that had like was predisposed to know or has a background in taking down warlords.
So
JR,
if you didn't listen to the pod, we did a deep dive on the Sixers' newest partner, Colorstar Technology, a metaverse company from China that used to be a concrete company that has a CEO that does not seem to exist, at least in the form that is presented on the internet, which is a cartoon named Sir Lucas Capetian, who also graduated from Harvard this year, but didn't really.
With a degree, with an MBA, with like a super MBA, executive MBA in, you know, destruction or whatever.
In destruction, correct. Went from construction to destruction. That's why they needed a new CEO.
No, it's a very prestigious school of destruction.
Yeah. So JR works for the Century, and the Century is a nonprofit founded in part by George Clooney that investigates financial ties to African warlords. So JR did this deep dive on the pod. And I guess I'm just wondering after that, the deep dive showing many investors that are investors in this Colorstar also have accusations of financial improprieties, the fact that the organization does not seem to have any physical location or office or anybody who just works for that. So anyway, it's a good listen.
And that's important when you have an organization. You want people that work for you.
Correct.
You're going to need that.
Do you, after thinking about it, now I was in the arena last night. I will say I was looking the entire time at the ribbon, which is the digital advertising that goes around Wells Fargo Center. I did not see Colorstar one time.
Interesting.
So now—
Were you wearing your Colorstar shirt?
No. No, I was just wearing some normal t-shirt. So,
is that a choice?
Yeah, I didn't want to. I was like, should I wear a Ricky shirt? And then my friend who got us in, like got us in like through the team. And I don't care about messing with the Sixers, but I don't want to fuck with my buddy and be sympathetic.
Spike refuses to say the name. Yeah. Unbelievable.
There's an email about that, whether I should be banned or not. So I did not see that. Now, I don't know if their rotation rotates per game or whatever, but I did not see the Colorstar ribbon in the arena last night. Any further thoughts on that? Any predictions as to where we end up with Colorstar Technology?
No, I don't know. I mean, people are talking about it being like a like fraud and like a tax haven and like shell companies, and like they're using it to do something else. Or I really think it's the simplest explanation is someone offered them some amount of money.
Yeah,
not a ton of money, but some amount of money, and they're like, hey, we'll partner with you. Someone did like the smallest amount of research anyone's ever done on anything and was like, okay, cool.
Barely.
This is going to be fine. This guy's going to shake Chris Hecht's hand. That's Chris Hecht loves shaking hands. Yeah. And we're going to move it along, take that money and put it into, you know, whatever the fuck yacht shit we're all building towards.
By the way, that's how most advertising works. It's not like, hey, somebody wants to advertise. Let's like go through all of their SEC filings.
No,
like,
but you would say, what do they do? What is the metaverse,
bro? It's metaverse.
And I don't know. I just think like the expectations should be higher, like especially in a time where, like, you don't want to be everyone. Like, I'm sure they're parsing over like every friggin' like tweet from the Sixers account and being like, you can't say that. You don't want to offend anybody. You don't want to say this thing, like that's whatever. But like the business people, Chris Hecht is just like shaking hands with some guy that is going to like disappear. Like, and cause he doesn't exist in the metaverse like that. They're just being like, yeah, we'll take your money. It's fine. Like it's just a bad excuse. Like this is a big company. They are parsing over, like, there are a ton of people that work for this company that they're like, their job is to like protect the brand and try to make it like as clean and good and like not step on any eggshells and all this stuff. Like, we're going to be fine. And then like this one department, the department of like accepting money from shady fucking bullshit, is just like, that's our job. Give us the money. Go on. It's fine. Like, where does it end? Like how deep, how much bullshit? Like if someone was like, the slavery company wanted to advertise with the Sixers, would they be like, cool, yeah, that's fine. Like, what are we doing? Do some research on who you're partnering with. It's insane.
I agree. I would hope that given all of our questions publicly, and I have confidence that they will dive in and find out whether this company actually exists.
Any minute now. Sir Lucas doing a Reddit AMA.
Yeah.
Any second now. That's what he's ready. He's really just getting prepped for the public. It's going to be what an unveiling it'll be.
I would
remarkable.
Say
remarkable. Only the Sixers.
I would say that the Sixers delivering us Sir Lucas Capetian for the pod would be the ultimate, and we did enough research here. Doing their own research as popular.
Yeah, that would be a nice olive branch if they booked Sir Lucas Capetian on the podcast. That would be nice.
We would love to have Sir Lucas. So the mailbag writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. That is writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. This comes from Bronson. I've been noticing a Bill Simmons to nephew Kyle dynamic between Spike and CJ. Just wanted to make you aware.
CJ, you going to do any diss raps?
Yeah. Of who would he do the diss rap of internally? Because remember, it was about Ringer Union.
That's right. I would have to be like Sixers Adam and Zoe.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Abby. Just obliterating Abby.
Talking shit. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Anyway, you guys are the best. Your breakdowns of Homestar Runner or Color Star or whatever it's called got me through my Omicron case. Is it possible that you guys will end up dead in a ditch somewhere for sticking your noses into this shady company's business, as happens to bold reporters and shows like Narcos? I hope not.
That'd be funny. That'd be funny if this is how I died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Objectively, it'd be a funny way to go.
For sure.
The Sixers partnered with a fake company. We talked about it, made some jokes, and then I was assassinated by that company. That'd be pretty good. I've often said that the Sixers would kill me, and that would be a different way for that to happen. Not a way that I would have expected it to happen.
I've said that, like, somebody asked me, you know, would you rather die this way or that way? And I always pick the one that's like the bigger story. You know, like, I think Sixers podcaster.
Other podcasts need the content, and you're just being generous. You're using your death to at least get people through some episodes.
If I happen to, now I know if you die, if you get killed because of this Color Star thing, we will do another pod about you getting killed. But I need to put this on CJ in that if I get killed, you have to make sure Mike does at least one more pod about
this. Absolutely. Okay. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in.
This comes from Mark. Basketball question. There's been a lot of talk about the best possible landing spots for 25's ability to flourish in his career. But what would you say are the worst possible landing spots that come for him? Two come to mind, New York Knicks and LA Lakers. They seem to have the best worst combination of possible of media scrutiny, fan expectations, and recent poor performance to potentially drive him into early retirement. Not thinking at all about potential trade value for the Sixers, just what would be worst for him.
Yeah, I mean, what he wants is a moving target, and it has been vague this whole time. Like, he wants to go to a bad team, but he wants to go to a good team that would respect him, and he wants to go to a smaller media market, but he also loves a bigger media market. It's just like, he just doesn't want to be here anymore. Like, all the justifications he's used for that of like what happened is just like, it's all retconned in. Like, he doesn't want to be here anymore, and they're just him or his people or Rich Paul or whatever. Or just like grabbing for like any excuse to be like, this is the reason today of why it is. So I don't know. I think for a basketball purpose, like him being with a center that doesn't shoot would be bad. Him being with on a team without like a point guard that can also initiate and shoot would be bad. So yeah, the Knicks are kind of that in some sense for sure.
I think less from a basketball perspective, he needs to go somewhere where the expectations are low for a while so he can like that, the hurdle that he's going to have to get over mentally over the next 6 months to a year is massive. I just don't think a team with any real expectations immediately, I think will be pretty tough for him. By the way, hat tip to Torin, who also asked if I should be banned for not wearing Ricky merch. This is the non-basketball question from Mark. Mike and Spike are a two-man garbage crew. Which one is driving the truck and which one is picking up the garbage? The driving pros doesn't have to touch or smell the garbage, probably cooler or warmer than outside. Picking up pros, better exercise, get to be outside, don't have to frustratingly drive 5 miles an hour all day.
I would say I probably would want to switch often to just not get bored. 5 miles an hour would be boring, but also always being the the guy to do it would be tough.
If I had to pick one, I'd rather be grabbing the garbage. I can't. Okay. I couldn't deal with driving. Just driving behind a garbage truck like for 10 minutes will make me fucking insane. I couldn't do it.
I feel like I'd have a good time with it. It's a big thing. I try to get good at it and try to have like play little games with myself of how I can like succeed.
And final email. This comes from Evan. Aloha. As per the rules, one basketball, one non-basketball. Would love for you guys to settle these arguments. Basketball question, is Joel Embiid a good rebounder? Empirical stats show he's an all-time great rebounder, but he rarely boxes out, and the eye test shows he gets rebounds mostly because he's tall and defends the rim. One would argue that he has poor effort and intuition while rebounding, likely because he's asked to do so much already on both sides, offense and defense, but stats will say otherwise. So basically, stat versus eye test debate. My sense is he's a good rebounder, and it just sort of lies there. He's not like super box out guy, but when you're 7 foot tall defending the rim, you don't need to be super box out guy. You just kind of need to get the rebounds that are there.
But like, who is super box out guy these days?
Yeah, like who's like Kevin Love? Like Kevin Love in his prime was like this monster box out rebound guy or whatever.
Yeah, or even like, you know, people from the past, like Charles Barkley, Wes Unseld or something, like guys that are like really shoving their ass into other guys and like creating space. It doesn't seem like it happens anymore because they're not living under the rim as much. So it's guys like flying in for rebounds from like contests or something. Just doesn't seem like it's as there. I think you really mostly only see it like on foul shots and stuff. And the time you see the most, like honestly, maybe it's just the time I notice it the most, but like you see the most boxing out from like little guards boxing out a bigger guy, like a Kyle Lowry or whatever, like shoving his ass into somebody and creating some space and coming out with the rebound. You see more like fingertip control, like going and getting the ball type thing, like having a nose for it in that. Like, I don't even think like Rodman was much of a box out guy. He just like anticipated it quicker than anybody else.
Yeah. Effort and athleticism. And he was like a fucking lunatic. Non-basketball question and much more important question. Who's the better actor, Nicolas Cage or Brendan Fraser? Brendan Fraser pros, Encino Man, School Ties and Airheads. Brendan Fraser cons, everything else. Nick Cage pros, Raising Arizona, Leaving Las Vegas, Adaption, Con Air and The Rock. Also Pig, he didn't mention. Nick Cage, cons, everything else. Both have had all-time historical bad performances in many films. Some will argue Nick's highs are higher and his lows are lower. This debate has been going on for 20 years. I don't know who's had this debate, but clearly in Evan's world. And neither has added anything toward their highlight reel since it started. Please settle this for good. Mike, I'm curious, as you are in the industry, who you think is better.
Oh, I think definitely Nick Cage's highs are higher. I don't dislike Brendan Fraser. I think he gets a bad rap sometimes, but there's some like all-time performances from Nick Cage, whether it's, you know, Raising Arizona or Moonstruck or Con Air is awesome. Like there's like even his campy stuff is really very funny. And I still have to see Pig. But yeah, I think it's pretty clearly Nick Cage. And no one's having this argument. Brendan Fraser is like no one's having this argument.
Yeah. Brendan Fraser says who, me or Nick Cage?
It's
not even like they're like an NSYNC or Backstreet Boys thing where they sit in the same place.
If you want to do like a Nick Cage or Travolta type thing, then you can be like, okay, great, we're starting from Face Off and we're going out from there and we're seeing, but like, and they're similar like levels of like a ton of camp to their performances, but well, yeah.
And I'd also say that the other mistake here is saying that neither has added anything to their resume. The last like 5 years of Nick Cage, he's had like these cult successes, but has had like Pig, like has had a few really successful movies that way and performances that way. I think it's pretty clear that Nick Cage is a better actor. Now this doesn't say which has had a bigger career, and I think that's Nick Cage as well, but I would say Nick Cage is a better actor. I would trust Nick Cage with him. All right. Well, there we go. We will be back with you next week. Oh, I'd like to give a congratulations. I don't think he listens, but my hat this week is University of Incarnate Word. And the reason it is University of Incarnate Word is because former Eagles favorite of mine, G.J. Kinney, is now the head coach at University of Incarnate Word. He was a coaching assistant with the Eagles, and they bounced around to a few different places, Hawaii, Central Florida, and now he's got his head coach opportunity at University of Incarnate Word. So congrats, G.J. Kinney. We'll always be a fan.
There you go.
We will be back with you this week, and we'll keep our eyes on the Color Star situation. Hopefully neither of us gets murdered. Are you down with TTP?
I want CJ to say it. I want to hear him say it.
Pop up, buddy.
Yeah. You know, like this.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for plan B.